chocolate arugula is my shit. I'm kidding. But it is somebody's thing, definitely. Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans, ladies and gentlemen. I am Stephen Van Patten. As always, I am joined by the illustrious Mark Abbott and the brother man himself, Kirk Johnson, who it looks like he's listening to the Johnson Brothers at the moment. Hey, listen, I'm actually very excited. Our guest tonight, old friend, who had, along with being a journalist, a ridiculously funny stand-up comedian, and we're also celebrating the two-year anniversary of the African American Literary Award winning Fuck Your Diet and Other Things My Thighs Tell Me. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome to Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans the one and only Chloe Hilliard.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much.
Oh, please, no. I got to tell you, you've been doing some amazing stuff, and you know, just the stuff you've been posting online, the comedy album, Big Dick Energy. You've been
EDE.
Exactly. you've been killing it these past couple of years, even in the face of a pandemic. So, you know, it's great to have you here, and it's great to see you. And I got to tell you, is that actually your apartment? Or?
No, it's not. Okay.
I was about to say, yeah. I was like, well, wait, you making bucks? Wait, what kind of, you got bay windows?
What is that?
No. It's a Zoom. It's a Zoom background. It's a Zoom world. Listen.
Okay.
If I had known better, yes. I would have got like a Star Wars background or something like that. But already in there.
As long as you invested in Zoom, you'd be all right.
That is true.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Yeah. Speaking of Star Wars, since you brought that up real quick, one of the things I think we were going to kick around real quick was Boba Fett and how it's actually catching a little criticism because it's not the same. It's not the Mandalorian again.
But he's not the treatment of Rancors. That's not it.
Well, ASPCA, after right. that Return of the Jedi incident, you know, they've been watching.
You mean the RSPCA?
Yeah.
You know what? I can't with you. I can't.
Rancor cruelty.
Well, you know, they figured out a way to prevent that. Danny Trejo.
Yes.
You can't get anybody badass than Danny Trejo.
No, say this, can't. It's so much better than Chuck Norris, because if Chuck Norris was doing it instead, I'd be really upset. knowing how he feels about the plight of Black Americans in this country.
Oh God.
You know, he ain't gonna give a fuck about no rancors.
All of these B-level action heroes now have the most staunch political views. And it's like you were never talking in sync. All your movies are trash.
Yeah.
And they came on Saturday afternoon when nobody had anything better to do. And now you're sitting here like you are at the precipice of like a political awakening.
Wait, you know what the worst part is, Chloe? Is that his pretty much all those B movies that he did back in the 80s? That's because of Black and Latino people wouldn't see the movies.
That's right.
And this ranch is much financed by cats who were getting beat up by the cops. So it's like, come on, nigga. Come on, nigga.
No, that's absolutely true. I mean, but let's keep it real. There's a lot of cats out here who were brought on and they had that friendly face and then they make that money. And I'm not even going to go to Chuck Norris. You know how I'm going to Dr. Oz, because Oprah put him on.
Yes.
And he put on that whole, hey, everybody, let's look at poop and do all this other bullshit, right?
Like a Bill Nye of health.
Meanwhile, but not really, because he's selling trash, really. And he's just doing shit producers are telling him. And meanwhile, you've got like real health gurus and real doctors and people that do other things outside of cardiology. They've got to argue with all their patients because of some bullshit they heard on Dr. Oz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the thing is, we gave him that power. So that now
Oprah gave him that.
Well, yeah, no, Oprah put him on. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know,
I go front. I did watch him Dr. Oz back in the day. I lied to you guys.
Well, yeah, because he was always in his scrubs. I was like, he got to be telling the truth. He on Oprah with his scrubs on.
Exactly. See why I say he's like the Bill Nye of health? Because, you know, he was kind of goofy. Came on with scrubs, not a suit. You know, he had some fun shit for your moms to check out. So you and your mom.
That was a sitting fake there. On-air persona.
It was. No, it was. But was when you and your mom, when you and your mom sitting there looking at Dr. Oz talking about health together, you know, that's a big deal. It's you and your mom. It ain't like nobody else. It's you and your mom actually having a moment. So my big black ass with my mom sitting there watching TV of Dr. Oz. We don't watch anything else together but Dr. Oz. That shit is a moment.
Mm.
That motherfucker fucked up. I'm a little upset now.
Well, did y'all watch it when he had Trump on as a guest?
No.
I stopped watching at that point.
Okay.
and my mom started watching The Daily Show.
Okay. All right. As long as the train has corrected itself.
Yeah, we corrected each other.
Yeah. No. That's good to know. I would, you know, I'd be, I don't want to say upset at you.
Disappointed.
In the beginning.
That's it. Disappointed.
In the beginning, there was Jack.
Sorry.
I'm just saying.
Why I did that.
We were talking about the Mandalorian, the Robotech.
Well, right? We were about to go into Boba Fett.
I derailed the train.
That's good. No.
You didn't.
No. Like Boba Fett did.
This train derails itself all the time, right,
yes.
Mark?
Huh?
Exactly. So
we like the Amtrak competitor that never got off its feet. It's Samtrak.
Yeah. I mean, especially since
we're the Silver Street.
Right. Oh shit. Yeah, especially since we don't really have like commercials or music. And you know, like it's silly rabbit segues are for kids. You know, that's kind of how we do it here. But yeah, you know, I guess I'm just still annoyed because now my evil ex-boss is trying to actually be a senator, and now he's shown his true colors, and it's just like, yeah, nah, son.
Right.
I already sent $100 to John Fetterman. So, wait. But of course, of course,
that's right. I used to work on that show. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I did the first season.
Yeah.
So sidebar. Did you know who he really was? Like, was it clear? Was it evident when you were working on that show?
No, my overall treatment during the show was the final enlightening factor for, you know, who this person really was.
Kind of like Boba Fett.
And the crazy thing is, so the rap party, after I've had like probably the most miserable work experience ever. Like I actually like borderline committed, like was thinking suicide. Like I was really in a bad place. I was drinking like a storm. Mm-hmm. And so we're at the rap party. And he comes up to me, and it's almost like a Fredo Michael moment, because he just kind of walks up and he's like, I know I was kind of a dick, but you know, I'm sorry. And he kind of pats me.
Oh, cool.
Sort of, you know, and he walks away. 2 days later, I get a phone call from the director. So we're all fired. Yeah. Like I said, Fredo. So.
Didn't even make him an offer he could refuse.
No, I didn't get the offer. I got the trip on the boat. That's what I got.
Wow.
I got the trip on the boat.
That was some gangster shit.
But then a lot of other people did too. Like they just cleaned house that first season.
Wow.
Director and everybody. So there was that. But anyway, back to Boba Fett, which I'm finding entertaining. I'm not sure if Chloe got a chance to see anything, but we'll jump.
Yeah, I started watching. Now, full disclosure, I am not a Star Wars head. Not that I'm anti-Star Wars. I just got in too late. So like by the time I was of age to start really getting into sci-fi, they were doing like the new chapters, and then everybody was like, you can't. So then it was like, well, I'll wait. So I really need to watch it in order so I can see it in chronological order, not in release order.
Right.
But I do like the world. I do like the world. And I feel like it does answer a lot of questions. But I also think my biggest issue well, my only real issue with Star Wars is that they try to add so much stuff as canon after the fact and then get mad at you because you don't sign on to the bullshit that they just made up to keep the story going.
No, that's true. That's true. They struggle with that hard. You're absolutely right. Because I think, you know, in a way, the whole franchise is kind of painted in a corner in the sense that, first of all, George Lucas, when he's walking off the set of American Graffiti and he's getting ready to do this thing, there's no fucking way that he knows what this thing is about to become. There's no way.
And, but that's why I feel every episode, like every version of it, is like a little kid saying, and then, and you're like, where's the story going?
Right.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. That's true. And now, and I've said this, I think I said this last week, like, because we were talking about how it's not as violent as you would think it is because this is like a space crime thing.
Right.
It's still a Disney entry.
It's a Disney entry, yeah.
So even though Boba watched Sam Jackson cut his dad's head off,
right?
He's not going full psycho. He's not going full Batman. At least not while the mouse is in charge.
You know what? I think it's something in the tank. Something in the rejuvenation tank is mellowing. I think it's CBD in that water because he comes out real chill. And them dreams are way too vivid. Like I'll be like, listen, I don't want to go back because them dreams is too much.
Acid drop.
You know, that's wow. All right, that's good.
I can subscribe to that.
Yeah.
Hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah.
Hit the nail on the head there.
It's just funny because it feels like the fans feel like they have a say in what somebody else is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's almost like I put my money into this series and I've watched these movies since I was a kid. So you need to listen to what I tell you how this whole thing should go. I mean, the man was in a pit for we don't know how long.
Mm. Right.
That changes some things. He had time to reflect. He had reconsider his options when and if he got out.
Mm-hmm.
He crawled out. He got mugged. The moment he crawled out, the Jawa stole his stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he got picked up, put prisoner. Right. And I mean, after a while, you have to reconsider. It's almost like he doesn't deserve to redeem himself and come at this whole thing in a different way. Everybody wants the Boba Fett from Empire Strikes Back. And that's a completely different character, which now... What's interesting to me is that there's a thing that people seem to not know exists. It's called, wait for it, character development.
Mm.
Yeah. We don't stay, the character is supposed to evolve. He's not supposed to stay the same. I'm sure the brother Wookiee that ran off into the desert after this last episode, he's going to take time to reflect.
Black Wookiee family?
Yeah, he's gonna go home, have a couple of drinks, talk Black to Wookie his family. Wife. Right. She's gonna basically tell him, "I told you not to go out there."
I told you why he was running away, man. The Jawas, man, them niggas is quick. If you don't, you know, he drove out there, and now he got imprisoned for like what, a couple of hours. In that few hours, his land speeder just got like totally like it's no longer a land speeder; it is a can of sand. Jawas ain't shit and he knows that.
Yeah, he does.
But I think like you said, that's the biggest problem with this, with the whole series, is that people feel like they have so much ownership, and also who are these people, right? And so you know, there's, if you did like the circle overlap, like I feel like that middle is like people who are just angry about everything and who are unhappy in their lives because they subscribe to this fantasy and life didn't end up that way. So that's the only thing they have to hold on to. You know, like if you grew up thinking the darkness is what's going to be evil, I need to be light. And then everybody's like, yeah, no. Darkness always wins. In America, darkness wins. What the fuck are you talking about? This is real life. And now you're like, well, I have to either delve into fantasy world to feel some sort of fulfillment, or I'm going to try and right or wrong. And it's like, this was a movie by a man who had an idea,
right?
And you made it your entire life philosophy, and he don't even know what the fuck is going on in this shit no more. He doesn't get the check.
They don't, and if it, like each one of them, with the possible exception of Rogue One, like each movie, each series, there's usually at least one glaringly ridiculous mistake. Off the top of my head, I'm forgetting the actual title, but it's the one where Han Solo, because Harrison Ford is like, I've had enough of playing this fucker. I'll come back, but y'all gotta kill me. So his grumpy ass is
Force Awakens.
And right, Force Awakens. Force Awakens,
thank you.
Okay.
And so he's dead. They're all coming back off the ship.
Right.
And the first thing Princess Leia does is run to the teenage girl that y'all just met, as opposed to having a conversation with the Wookiee best friend that right. you've all known each other for multiple decades. Right. That's where you're kind of like, okay, who the fuck's in charge now? Because what? Yeah. What? So she's not going to say anything to Chewbacca? Nothing. They're going to have nothing.
Remember like, that. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm sitting in the theater irritated. Like I was like,
see now,
what are we doing?
I want to address something that both Chloe and Mark brought up in terms of how fans have this connection with a free feel, yeah, entitlement. And I'm on the other side, like, you know, fans, if it's not for the fans, then there is no Star Wars.
True,
that's understand that we got to understand that. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea of some people latching on to these fantasies for a sense of fulfillment is, I think it's valid to say, because I think this is not anything new. Like it wasn't Star Wars once upon a time. It was William Shakespeare, where people latched onto and had and experienced these ideas of right and wrong and good and evil. You know, we don't get our ideas of ethics and morality from school. We get them from stories. Mm. We get them from authors and creators and people who sing about it and tell the tales and so on and so forth. You know what I mean? I'm like a big proponent of never telegraphing a message in a story,
right?
Or in a song. You know, don't do that. It's preachy, and it doesn't last. What you have to do, and I think this is the honest truth of it. Stories manipulate our emotions and manipulate how we treat one another. Mm-hmm. I mean, stories are all about an emotion. You start with this, you manipulate the emotion for this particular character to follow them through to the rest of the story. Yeah. And that's what it's really about. And people, the people who consume, readers, listeners, you know, they are, if the story is good, they become very invested in it because it becomes a part of their mantra. Mm-hmm. Right. And I have much sympathy for that. I don't think they're wrong for this. What I do think though, is there needs to be for the author. I mean, his fans can rant and rave about it all they want and tell him what's wrong and what works and what don't work. It's up to the author to actually take it or not. Right. The author could be like this. You know, that is a valid point. That's not going to happen, though. Right? Right? And to Steve's point, it's kind of like, you know, you guys, you have a good point about, yeah, Boba Fett should probably be a little violent, a little more like Corleone. But I think you need to take that up with the mouse. I'm sorry. And you know, the way America is in terms of commodities and capitalism and such and so forth, artists don't get that kind of, once upon a time in France, I remember in France and England, the government actually set up a program, subsidy program, where they financed the arts. Mm. You don't got that shit. No. If the government finances the arts, we don't worry about how much money our product is making. All we worried about is, did we tell a good story?
Yeah.
And if we tell a good story, the fans will come. If you don't tell a good story, the fans won't come, but I can still eat, have an apartment, and drink.
Yeah.
That's not the way in America. If it ain't good, you still trying to find an apartment every five months because, you know, you don't have enough money to make rent. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know what I mean? So I'm just saying.
I will say this though, as a writer.
I don't. Yeah.
As a writer.
Mm-hmm.
People will find what they want in your work.
Mm-hmm.
Because
they will interpret. They will interpret what it is.
You could be talking about something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And someone will say, well, I understand. I love the fact that you put the whole God theory in there. You're like, there's no God theory in my work. There's none right. whatsoever. Right. No, man. And they will walk a line of people waiting to get your autograph and go, hey, talk to him about the God thing. You know, to the point, you're sitting there like, you're the 15th person that come and said that
right.
to me.
Right.
I mean, because again, it's almost I like.
But that's kind of like a beautiful thing, isn't it? Isn't it a beautiful thing about that though?
But I liken this back to what Mark Hamill said when Lucas told him, mm-hmm. that Vader was his father and Leia was his sister, and he was like, when he said Vader was his father, he was like, okay, and he said, and then Leia will be your sister, and he goes, okay, you making this up as you go along, like, right. as he was like, right. I can't, right. Now you want me to subscribe to this? The woman right. has been like making right. out with me. Yeah,
she did make out with him.
But that one was considered the best Star Wars. That one is what not just critics but fans gravitate to as the most. Beloved of, you know what I mean? Even as contrived as that story is,
mm-hmm.
even as contrived, it had, you know, it says something about what people are engaged with, or what they want to, you know what I mean? Look at, I'm sorry, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's like William Shakespeare, when he came out with his plays, they were considered critical failures, but fan favorites. Like the critics hated it in the 1600s when, you know, the critics were like, oh, this is crap. This is, you know, it was considered toilet plays because it was like toilet humor. But yet now look at it.
Right.
Right. And that's not because of the critics, but because of the people who read them. The, for lack of a better term, the lower classes
mm-hmm.
who went to see those plays and took it with them all until the next generation.
I think the thing about fandom is this. It's like when we got the prequels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what were people mad about? Not because they were prequels, not because they had particular actors in them. They were mad because it wasn't the story they wanted to hear.
Right.
And so they drove one poor actor to the point where he could no longer be an actor anymore because Agreed. They pretty much sent him into a spiral of what's the word, depression, and they feel it's fair to do that. And it's like, it's almost like the soap opera. It's like when the, you know, Alex murders Janice's brother, and then the dude is walking down the street and gets assaulted by 40 women for killing somebody, and he's like, that's just a character I play on a show. Yeah. Y'all gotta, you know, and I think that's the point about this whole ownership and getting so immersed in a world that isn't real. Because we're all fans of The Wire. I walked around for 3 days mad because Omar got killed. I'm like, nothing I could do about it.
Right.
But
nothing you could do about it.
I know I wasn't gonna go down to Baltimore to the production and go slap some people around, be like, yo, why y'all do that to Omar, man? Right. You know, it's like, I think that's the point of taking your fandom too far. There's mm-hmm. nothing, no, because the fans do make, we all, artistically, we need our fans. We want our people and we want to give them the thing that makes them happy. Mm-hmm. But once you in your mind become to the point where it's like, I have a say in what this person should be writing. And if I don't, and they don't give me what I want, I'm just going to completely trash it and try and get other people to trash it because,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
then,
that's a problem.
Then I think it's like, okay, you're a little too down the rabbit hole, my man.
Yeah.
Is there a such thing as toxic fandom in that sense?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think the reason why the fans are so dedicated to this franchise is because it was groundbreaking at the time. And so if you, you know, if you had your mind blown, that brings up so many emotions, feelings that you always go back to. It's like a safe place. It's like a happy place. Mm-hmm. And the thing that bugs me out is like, there's so much ownership over a story that we don't see until it hits the screen. It's not like there is an anthology of books that you can reference and be like, this is amazing. I mean, I get it. Like, The Hobbit, sure, you know, even Game of Thrones, but people who read the books were like, the show isn't the same, but it's still good. And I think when people see Star Wars, anything that comes out, they're like, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. And it's like, you're using the source material that's so small that you're not even allowing the world to grow and develop. And right. Especially when you talk about like commodities and capitalism, it's like now Disney knows they have X amount of millions of people streaming on this platform, and they want it to be a show, a product that is reachable and understandable by the mainstream. If they wanted it to be niche and exactly. like avant-garde or like so close to the source material, it wouldn't have a big ass budget because nobody would watch it but a small group of people who understand all of the nuance. And so, yes, that's why he's not killing everybody. He should be killing everybody. There's no way I'm not letting no Tuscan kid hit me in the face because I don't want to give him no fucking water. Get out of here, goggle face. I'm killing you and your dog. And I'm gonna figure it out. I know how to get water now. Thank you.
And you know what?
Damn.
And you know what? It's that kind of honesty, and I'm about to segue here, that comes through in Fuck Your Diet. It really does. I want to just jump into that because what had happened was I was flipping through Instagram, and Chloe was like, hey, this is 2-year anniversary of Fuck Your Diet. And she goes, this whole thing is like, so if you got a podcast, I'm like, well, yeah, I got a fucking podcast.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, okay.
I seen the clips.
And I was like, so here she is. And, you know, like I said, I'm very grateful that you, you know, joined us today. But
is this where I get to tell the story of how we first met that you don't remember?
Oh, Lord.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Fine. Let's have that story.
I want to say the year.
Let me get my tea ready.
Okay, get the tea ready. It's nothing salacious. It's really funny though. Okay, so I want to say, I think I don't remember the year. I don't remember if I was in the program, but I think I was in the program. It was NYABJ. And
Oh my God.
In charge with showing us how to work the studio because we were going to record our NYABJ newscast. And I think
it was at LIU.
LIU Brooklyn. Yes. And you were working the studio and he did not want to be there. It was Saturday. It was a bunch of kids in high school. And he was like, I got to teach these motherfuckers how to use the board. Like, what is this? And you know, it's like a dad teaching you how to drive. And it's like, I'll just watch me do it and then figure it out. But I'm not going to let you sit in the driver's seat.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so we were like, okay. And so he just showed us everything. And then we ended up doing it. And that was the first time I met him. And then when I saw him again, I was like, I know you look familiar. And he was like, I don't know. But then I remember, but I never got a chance to tell you because you would always be working on set. So that's the first time I met you.
That is
years ago.
That was a long ass time ago.
Long ass time ago.
Mm. Holy shit. Wow.
You was that instructor. Little ass motherfuckers. Don't touch that button. Don't touch that button either.
All right. So what I do remember about that is, yes, it's very excited high school kids. It didn't really, you know, so it was like in order to get this accomplished, I had to sit each of them down and figure out which position they wanted, because I'm basically crewing them without knowing their skill levels, without knowing anything. And we still had to like get out of there at a certain amount of time. So it was like, you know, just figuring out who had the aptitude for what. And you know, we had set up the prompter and somebody had to stage manage and somebody had to do this, that, you know. And what was really funny about that was, so we finally get everybody in their positions and we shoot the first segment and I'm directing. So I'm calling this, I'm calling that, da, da, da. So it was like a 3 or 4 segment presentation. We get through segment 1. and you would have thought we won the Super Bowl because they were like, ah! And I'm like, yo, we're not done yet. Calm down. Like, it literally took me 2 minutes to settle them down because they were like, ah, like, it was bananas. It was, and I laughed about it after the fact, but you know. In a moment, yeah, I was probably a little surly.
No, I get it. It was a Saturday. It was a bunch of, we was too excited. And you had no idea what you got into, but you made an impression. And I remembered that face. And so when I saw you and I met you, I was like, oh, he's actually nice. And then.
You said, oh, he's actually nice.
Oh, my God.
But listen, that's like 25 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
It's a long time ago.
Yeah. He ain't changed though. You first meet him, you're like this motherfucker. Yeah. And then you meet him later for drinks. He's like, wow, he's the nicest, coolest dude I've ever met.
Yeah, the common denominator might be the alcohol, but thank you, Chloe, for that wonderful anecdote. There you go. Jeez.
So Chloe, I gotta say this because, so I watched the thing about the thing you said about the coin, putting Maya Angelou on the coin, and I don't know why this popped in my head, but someone showed me this years ago because it didn't click till you said, you know, they got her on one side and the slave owner on the other,
yeah,
and I'm like, and first I was like, wait, she's not on the front of the quarter, like. I thought that's where I thought they were putting her. And then it dawned on me, somebody had showed me this thing years ago when I was in college about money being the root of all evil and that all the silver coins face one direction, but the penny faces a completely different direction.
Because it has Lincoln on it.
And it's also the worth the least and the darkest coin. And I was like, I just loved that bit because I was like, wow, I didn't even think about the fact that they're not putting her on the front. And then I think Stephen and I started talking about the Harriet Tubman situation because I said to him, I was like, I didn't know the president had that much say over what the mint actually puts on the currency. At least I didn't know he had that much influence in stopping them from putting whoever they want on the currency. So, that was, thank you for that.
And Harriet Tubman was going to be on the back of Andrew Jackson. They weren't going to take him off. He would be able to share it as well. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's what really kind of annoys me about that, the whole thing. It's like Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
One of the most horrible human beings in the world.
Yeah.
You know, just be glad he wasn't teaching the class that day. Let's just put it like that. I'm mystified. And I think, and Chloe, I think you've hit on this a couple of times in your social media stuff. Just talking about how instead of anything meaningful, like, oh, let's say voting rights, we're stuck in a world of symbolic gestures. Here's a little something. Y'all go back and watch TV now, you know? And it's because prime example, when they painted the big old Black Lives Matter all up and down Fulton Street and you had the murals and you had this and you had that. And it was on one hand, it was nice to see. It was a nice moment of consciousness and a whole nine. 6 months later, that shit's gone and ain't a damn thing changed.
No.
Just symbolic gestures. And I don't know what we have to do at this point to impress upon people that we need more. I really don't.
Yeah. I have some suggestions.
Oh, yes. Well,
okay.
So, I was actually kind of queuing that up because I felt like you had suggestions. I just wanted to.
Yeah, of course. Listen, you got to understand every first world country, every major empire collapses, right? It's inevitable. And I think that is the thing that we need to understand, that America is on a decline, and it's not something that we can change, because China and India and Russia, who is pulling on these puppet strings, are on our backs. And so now it's time where we say, okay, it's time to circle the wagons and take care of home. And what does that look like? But the problem with that is America is racist. And now we have to start calling that out instead of offending people who say, why would you say I'm racist? Because you're doing racist things. Like, this is why you're racist. We know it. And I think the biggest thing when it comes to Black people is we have to stop asking why, as if the answer is ever going to be a good enough answer, when the answer at its base is racism. Because, you know, if we did that, they would, we already know that. So what's next? Like, I don't want to have those conversations anymore. And so the biggest way I feel like we can make an impact is a work stoppage. People have to stop working. That's the only thing, is when you impact the bottom dollar, and in a way where you can't, where you're not protesting, because then they arrest you and you end up accruing bills and having to get a lawyer and bail yourself out. Stay home. If everybody's like this, if Latinx Americans stayed home for 2 days, the economy would stop. You know, if people who work those hourly wages, those essential workers stop, if like France loves striking, you ever see France will strike at the drop of a dime. People are like, we're going to strike tomorrow, next Tuesday, 7 a.m.
It's the whole country. Yeah. The
whole country. Stop.
The whole country.
And so we need to start utilizing our power that way, because we're trying to have people empathize with us because of our race. And that may never happen, but they will respect us because we can stop the money. And so if you stop the money, that's when you get the change. That's why the Civil War happened. It wasn't because they cared about slaves. It's because they cared about the money. Everything is about money. The reason why the war in the Middle East stopped, because it was like, oh, we're running out of money. There's no money. There's no point. Pull them out. So that's what it is. You have to affect money. I do a joke. I don't protest. I'm not going in the streets. I'm too tall. I'm gonna get hit in the head first. I'm lactose intolerant. I can't put milk in my eyes. I mean, I'm not out here wasting my time, but I could sit at home and not work easily and shut things down.
Good point.
Do y'all remember, do you remember that? I told these guys a few years ago, we had a conversation about the Occupy Wall Street. And I said, you know what everybody should have done? They should have all collectively got everybody together and start going to the banks and closing out their accounts and take their money to like MCU, to a credit union, because nobody cared. But suddenly when it's like literally the run on the bank, if there's no money in the bank, like there's no interest rates being incurred. There's no, you know, nobody's pulling out credit cards or refinancing anything, because now what are you going to do? You've got everybody leaving, and I'm pretty sure if each day 15 to 20 people from different sections of the city just went in and was like, I want to close my account. I want to close my account. I think the next thing would have happened was the bank would have been saying, well, we're not allowing people to close their accounts, which then causes a run on the bank. Because they would literally, I always liken that to the Mary Poppins, the scene in Mary Poppins when the kid screams out, they're taking my toppings. And everybody's like, I want my money out. And they shut the bank door. And they're like, stop all transactions, because people are trying to take their money out.
Because the banks need our money. Like, the banks run with our, like, people don't understand. When you look at your bank account, that money isn't there. They're just showing you what you have, but it's not sitting in a bank account. They're using that money to buy stocks and to trade and to, like, you know, give out loans. We don't realize how powerful we are, but I think people are starting to realize that, because now it's so clear that when people do buck up, they're like, okay, we'll fix it. Here's a little bit. Here's something to keep you quiet. Here's Black Lives Matter written down Fulton Street to keep you quiet. And then we're like, yeah, but we've been seeing these gestures, like you said, for years. So what are you going to do? And now people are like, because of social media, because of TikTok, people are like, they can, once you tell me, the IRS can text me and tell me that my tax return is ready, and that the president can text me and say, here's $1,400. You can make some stuff happen. So we've seen you do it now because of the pandemic. So now you can't keep keep lying to our faces.
So I don't know. Joe Biden is obviously a better, I mean, shit, Jim Carrey would be a better choice for president than Donald Trump.
Don't get me started.
You know, but I feel like he's just now coming out of this nap that he's been in. I don't know. I've always had mixed feelings about Joe Biden. I mean, I voted for him because, you know, it was like the other guy. But I always had mixed feelings because I always felt like when he was with Obama, he was basically there to like mitigate like expectations. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Obama came in and he was kind of like, all right, well, first thing I'm going to do is this and fuck Mitch McConnell. And it's like, all right, son, easy. This is what we're going to do. I'll go punch Mitch in the face. But as far as this legislation goes, and I feel like, you know, I have so many things I can rattle on about as far as Obama's presidency goes, but I always question, because Joe wasn't necessarily, because remember, like, he was the same cat that was talking about super predators and all this other shit. So it's kind of like, wait, so you were down with the whole war on drugs thing just as much as everybody else, because everybody was fucking scared, I guess. I don't know, but you know, now he's president, now he's doing this, now he's doing that. He's making these speeches, and of course, when you're in that position and you make that speech, of course, the Republicans, and this is what they're good at, just in terms of staying on message. They're like, Democrats, some of us would be mad at this, some of us feel it, you know, and it's like, it's like you can't even have a dialogue. Like, why at this critical point in our lives are AOC and Nancy Pelosi even beefing? Like, you've got a monster in the room with you. That's like the zombie apocalypse fucking starts. And then as we trying to kill the zombies, all of a sudden Kirk goes, yo, man, what happened with my car? And I'm like,
wait, well, I got to be the one that causing discord.
Like, don't get in your feelings. It's like, you know. But do you understand what I'm saying?
Stop. Yeah, I do.
I know. I probably should have known better. But but you understand what I'm saying? It's like, you've got, I mean, it, just the fact that, because people came up to me, because like, I work in television, so I must know these things. Well, why did CNN bust Chris Cuomo out? Because all he was doing is warning his brother and this, that, and the other thing. You know, but the thing is, our side, well, when I say our side, I'm not really talking about us, because pretty much every Black person that I've spoken to about the Chris Cuomo thing is like, where's his fucking brother? Like, what do you think? What's he supposed to do? But because CNN can't be Fox and in their own little, you know, it's like what bothers me about it, it's like it's throwing the fight.
Yeah. You it's know, like, they're not better. They're just not them. Like, that's how they've been able to like maneuver.
Right.
Like, we're not really doing what we should be doing, but we're not them.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And at the end of the day, you know, as we see, especially after that Trump presidency, like, politics is theater. Like, that's Shakespeare. This is our modern day Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And I think they tell us whatever we want and we believe it, and we believe that they're good people. But at the end of the day, human beings are human beings. And I feel like every single person, once they get into a position of power, can be compromised. And I feel like the Republican Party for sure is lock and step, because they've all been compromised with whichever way it is, however way they're incentivized, they stick to that.
Yeah.
Because also you got to think about the majority of the Republicans. They come from small middle America where they don't make that money if they did an honest job. So now you get a little base salary, but now you get to make so much money on the back end doing illegal shit, insider trading. The fact that Nancy Pelosi was like, wait, we should still be able to trade stocks. It's like, bitch, you just told on yourself. Now you just told on yourself.
How about that?
Yeah.
So they're all out to get something for themselves, you know, like, so we have to say, if you're really supposed to work for us, you're really supposed to work for us. And we don't really hold them to it, because when we complain, what they tell us to do, send an email and call the office.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Or give us some money and we'll make sure it gets better.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I gave Obama a couple of bucks back in 20. I guess it was like, was it 08 or some shit like that? And the emails just kept coming. And then more Democrats that got my email address. And it's like, and it's Michelle and everybody except the dog, you know, was like emailing me. And, you know, and going back to the Dr. Oz thing. So I told y'all I gave $100 to John Fetterman, the opponent. What started happening next? Take a guess. Emails. Hey, Steve, how you doing over there in Brooklyn?
And that's the thing. They're so personal. Like, yo, we got to fight. You're like, who are we fighting? Who is this email from? Right. And then at the end, send $25.
Like, nah, and then it's another, motherfucker, I just sent you $100. We're not family, you know?
But you know what, you say that? That's what Fauci did this week to Rand Paul.
Yeah, I saw that.
He called Rand Paul out. He's like, I kept trying to figure out why he kept saying these terrible things about me. And then I went to the Rand Paul website. Right. And over here in this little blue box, you could see.
You can donate.
It says fire Fauci. And then it says donate 20, 30, yes. 40, 50. And I'm like, wow. It came with printouts.
The bottom is going to fall out. This is politics is a scam. As far as like the money grab, like that part of it, it's going to collapse on itself because someone's going to turn. The block is getting hot with all of these, you know, subpoenas, people thinking they just not going to show up to answer questions. It's like now the Democrats are like, now you have to take off the nice gloves and be like, nah, you got to come in here and answer these questions or you going to prison.
Yeah.
But are they going to do that? And that's,
I think there's like subsets of them like looking to do that. And then, but then there's like the leadership that is just full of shit. Because that Biden doing that, voters' rights speech, that was supposed to be fiery and get.
Yeah,
that was
alma mater.
That was bullshit. I'm sorry. That's like, you know that Sinema and Manchin are not going to get rid of the filibuster. You know this. What the fuck are you going on fire and brimstone for? For us. You need to get them niggas in line.
And then God makes sure that we can vote. Like, yeah. What?
No, because Sinema
voted in his life.
Right, because Sinema said, fuck God, I ain't going to do it.
God let slavery happen in the first place. So hey,
I mean, you got, if you can't get Manchin and Sinema in at like to yield, stop. You lost this one. You go ready for the primary. You get something set up so that they are not reelected for the primary and try to keep the Senate the way it is. But stop trying to fucking placate people. And trying to get people to think, oh, this is going to be different. Nigga, ain't going to be different if you still got the damn got holes.
Yeah. But you know what? And somebody has to correct me on this. Don't you have the power of executive? Like,
I thought
Donald Trump walked. Donald Trump walked in the first 3 days, signed what, 6 of these doggone things? Mm-hmm. People couldn't, Muslims couldn't fly, women had no right. And I was like, so if this means that much for you, just basically be like, look, I'm signing an executive order to pass the John Lewis Voting Act, because the only way they're going to be able to get rid of that is when they get rid of you. And if you can, at least fix that problem, you can secure you will be there for at least 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
God willing, the creek don't rise. But I don't understand. Like, I don't understand this. We've already seen what happens when you take that step. This is what happened with I hate to call it. I'm not going to call it Obamacare because that's not what it's called. The Affordable Care Act.
It's supposed to be called. Exactly.
The Affordable Care Act. Mark. That's the name of it. It's not Obamacare. So the Affordable Care Act, when they wanted that signed, the filibuster came up and the Democrats, you know what? We just going through with this. And they knew. They knew that was throwing the dice down the crap table because, you know, at least at some point the Republicans are going to do the same thing. That's politics. That's politics. It's going to be tit for tat. You do it to me this time. I'm going to do it to you next time.
Yeah.
But the majority of us are not stupid. We all know what politics is. We all know that, you know, you want to make a name for yourself. Do something to upset the establishment. AOC went over to Queens and stopped. Who's it? Was it Google or who?
From building
the thing. And people are running around, yay! Until you realize, wait a minute, Those were jobs. Those were people could have had careers. There's all this stuff.
It's Google. It ain't for us.
I know this, man. But it's one of
you ain't shit. Sorry, Mark.
No, I got you. But it's all like you said, Chloe. It's political theater. That's you know nothing. Now we got a new mayor here in New York.
Good luck. Thoughts and prayers.
Wait a minute. Here's the funny thing. So we just had somebody got. I don't mean this is funny, but somebody got thrown in front of a train the other day.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, his thing popped up on my Twitter feed, and he, you know, our prayers and stuff go out to the families. But, you know, great job, NYPD for apprehending this offender. And right under that comes the real New Yorkers. Well, this wouldn't have happened if you had gone ahead and done X, Y, and Z. And what happened to the policies you were supposed to pass? And what happened? I was like, yeah, you didn't think that you wanted to be mayor, huh? Because now they're blaming everything that Koch didn't do, they're going to blame you for.
Yeah. Yo, I said, this is Koch, like this is modern day Koch. Like, people don't understand, like, he is a bait and switch. But the reason why he's only kissing the NYPD's ass is because he tried to appoint his brother as number two. And they was like, listen now.
Right.
You've gone too far.
The guy that ran, like, a parking department parking lot, at a school. Like, it's like, dude, you are literally, like, weeks in. And it's like, and it should be easy because... Right now, like a couple of weeks ago, like Andy Cohen lost his mind because de Blasio took a victory lap on New Year's Eve, lost his fucking mind. And that's like, I'm fairly certain Andy Cohen is a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you got Democrats and Republicans in New York all united on one thing, de Blasio sucked. Okay, and don't get me wrong, when the whole thing with him telling his kid that, you know, we had to talk because he's black and you know, and the cops fucking did their goonish shit during that time, you know, I was totally sympathetic to him, but truth of the matter is he just kind of sat around and did nothing for years.
Yeah,
for years did nothing, and then here comes Eric Adams. All you got to do is be better than this guy that really sucked.
Right.
And what's your fucking, what's your go-to move? You're going to put your asshole brother as deputy police commissioner? What kind of crazy boss
for his, but for his sec, for that? His security. That, well, that was
but it's secure,
for his
yeah.
security.
No, but first it was
security.
But now
no,
it's
no,
his.
No, but it was a part of it. No, but like now officially, but that was what he said. Like he basically was saying, I'm putting my brother in the NYPD because I don't trust y'all and I need a man. That's what he was saying essentially.
That's
and they were
saying.
Like, oh, you don't trust us?
Right.
And then the optics wise, it was okay, this guy doesn't have the credentials to really be the deputy NYPD commission, you know.
But still,
how you gonna you know, big up the police for getting the guy who pushed the lady in the train when the dude walked into the precinct. The dude gave himself up.
Right.
Who are you thinking?
Like Kevin Spacey at the end of Seven.
He just kind of right. You guys did a great job apprehending them. No, you didn't.
Well, that's because you got it because you know what? Because the police have gotten the crap handed to them. The veil during the BLM and the pandemic, the veil got pulled back.
Yeah.
And what we, you know, it's the sad part is it's almost like Rodney King. People in LA for years was like, the cops ain't shit. We keep telling y'all that. Then Rodney King gets beaten and everybody around the world is like, wow. And LA people like, told you. You know, it's like, so, you know, after that, was it a sergeant?
Eric Gardner. Eric Gardner? No.
Mm-mm. I'm going to talk about the sergeant, or was it the lieutenant, that shoved that girl during the march. he shoved her so hard she hit her head on the concrete.
It was a sergeant.
Outside the Barclays Center.
Yeah.
But her stepping in front of him, once that, once we started getting, seeing that, or the cops trying to mow everybody down right here on Flatbush Avenue during the march, and people are like, oh my God, the NYPD, and we're all in New York like, told you.
Been told you.
And Eric, you know better than anybody because you was on the force.
So exactly.
Don't come here.
Talking about, you know, we got to do something about these rogue police officers.
It's the whole thing. It's the whole system. But it's nationwide. Like, that was the thing that I learned the most during that whole, like, the civil unrest and the George Floyd movement, was that these police departments have charters that supersede the mayor's office. They have, they're locked in. So essentially, you can't really get rid of them. And then they have so many things that they put into, like, the stipulations of how to handle them after, you know, if they shoot somebody, they get two days to rest, to cool their head, and then come back and they get, so they have so many allowances that are written in stone that most cities, if they try to get rid of the charter or the contract, they get penalized because it's all written in. And so now you have a New York City police, former police officer who's now the mayor, who is going to be in catering to the NYPD for everything because those are his people. And, you know, I think the sad thing about Eric Adams, he's not my mayor, so I'm not going to call him Mayor Adams, is that he is falling victim to I'm the special Negro mentality. I'm the chosen one. I'm the one that's been on the inside. I'm the one that could talk to them. No. These are my friends. I can calm them down. And they're like, to us, you're still a nigga. So sure. We'll make you, we'll let your friends think you got some clout, but here you can get our fucking coffee. Shit.
Yeah, it's Staten Island. They're probably calling him mayor nigga. You know.
Yeah.
You know. But as we are winding down and coming down from our mutual disgust of recent events, Chloe, I do want to give you the opportunity to just say real quick, you know, like, just what motivated you to write Fuck Your Diet and where people can get it.
Because your diet.
Because people need to read this. And I'm saying this as a, because, you know, because I feel like it might come across as a only lady book, but no, like, I think everybody should check this out. So please.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So basically, I was a journalist. I've had many careers. I was a journalist for 10 years, as you heard my flashback story, my throwback story with Stephen. And when you're a journalist, you always want to write a book. Like, that is like the holy grail, to say, of accomplishment, you know, to appear in something and you have like the little chyron, author of. So I always knew I wanted to write a book, but it was a matter of what. And by the time I started working on my book, I was a comedian at that point. And I knew I wanted to use humor and tell my life story, but I didn't want it to just be like voyeuristic, where it's just like, I did this, I've done that, or self, you know, grandizing. And so I wanted to do a book that had research and facts and then connect the dots with my personal story, my experience with body image, body weight, diet culture, being a woman, feminism, racism, politics. It's really, it covers all of these things, but through the scope of how food in this country impacts us emotionally, physically, financially, and how that those things go on to impact us politically and, you know, interpersonal relationships with your own health. And I think the biggest thing that we all can identify recently was when COVID happened, everybody started talking about pre-existing conditions. And if you just hear that, you're thinking, oh, some people were just predisposed to certain things based on like an autoimmune disease or whatever. But pre-existing conditions are, you're fat, out of shape, you have high blood pressure, hypertension, high cholesterol, heart disease, and all those things essentially come from diet or exercise or lack thereof. And then when you look at the communities that are greatly impacted by that, they're largely African-American inner city communities that don't have resources, who are in food deserts or food swamps, meaning that there's no supermarket within like a mile radius. And then you're inundated with fast food, easy, low, you know, low nutrition foods. And then the other thing is, like, that is not just synonymous with Black and brown communities. There are poor white communities or even like middle class white communities that have the same food desert, food swamp, because they're in a middle America and there's no infrastructure. Right. And so you think about the ways in which pretty much like policy, capitalism, and greed have affected our health. And that's why people are like unsettled and angry and frustrated. And that's why we don't have universal health care, because if you did, everybody would be going to the doctor, and that mm-hmm. bill is tremendous. And so I wrote this book because really I had to let go of a lot of the hangups that I had when it came to my own identity and my own body image, because I kept measuring myself to an unrealistic metric, which is society mm-hmm. and a Eurocentric sense of beauty. And it was time for me to let those things go. It's not my fault that I was a fat kid. You know, part of it is genetic, sure, and exercise, but the larger influence was what they were putting in our school lunches. Yeah. And I think a lot of times we, especially in a Black community, we talk about like the conspiracy of like, oh, don't drink Tropical Fantasy because it's going to make you sterile. And while those things seem extreme, I think over an extended period of time, it's proven that foods that we eat, especially with a low income or lack of resources, really do negatively affect our bodies.
Yes.
And I just wanted to talk about it in a way that I was aware now, and I can kind of like forgive myself for the way I treated myself, because I put a lot of pressure on myself, like most people do, to be perfect or be thin or be this. And I basically wanted to tell people, like, F your diet, because there's so many larger things that influence how we eat in this country that we need to be aware of. And then also, you know, fuck that idea of subscribing to some shit that doesn't work for you. Like, I'm never going to do a grapefruit diet. I'm not going to, you know, like take a pill and poop out all the oil from my French fries. Like there are certain things that we just shouldn't have to do. And I wrote that book to hopefully let other people know that it's more complicated. You're not alone. It's not your fault. There are bigger things at play. There are bigger powers at play. And, you know, if you want an example of like, you know, the conspiracies, like, don't you remember a couple years ago, maybe like 10 years ago, all of a sudden we started seeing pistachio commercials, and you're like, who was pushing what? Because lobbyists paid on the behalf of pistachio farmers to make pistachios a thing. And now everybody's like, I want pistachios, you know? So you think about how we are influenced by marketing, capitalism, and corporate greed. And we're just having to live out our lives and try to make the best of a situation, because this is all that we have access to.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go, I did want to make one other note about this being a sort of a universal read. The research, what you might not expect in this book is, and I'm just going to just bring up one little thing. The research you did on breakfast cereal, or the history of breakfast cereal alone, it took my breath away. I was just like, wait, what? And you know, I'm a bit of a history buff, so I was just kind of like, oh shit, like that was and of course it speaks to your journalism background and just, you know, how you just kind of pulled all that together and sussed that out. So, you know, I just got to tell you, you know, I'm so happy and proud. You know, seriously, it's just great to see this, you know. And now that I have to kind of put it in context, it's like I was actually teaching you how to shoot something, and now you're this incredible person. Chloe, thanks for being here, really.
Thank you for having me.
You know, and where can people get the book? That's important.
The book is available wherever books are sold. If you want more information about the book, read a little snippet of it, you can go to your diet, spelled out YOURDIET.com. And from there, you can go to any portal and buy the book. It's on all the platforms. I also recorded the audiobook. So if you like the sound of my voice,
you
can listen to me read the book to you. And thank you for
full confession, that's actually how I did it.
Listen, I like
an awesome bedtime story. Diet. Shit, get ready for work.
It doesn't come in a boat. It doesn't come in a month.
fuck your diet.
Oh, and Kirk. Yes. There's some talk of the island folk and dancehall reggae in the book.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So,
I'm sorry, what's the matter with your voice, dog?
That was an homage.
Oh, that was my I know I was just fucking with him, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, so
Yeah, and Caribbean people, and Caribbean people need to start thinking about what they eat and how they eat. And
oh yeah,
how
yeah.
When they came to America, their shit got changed up. So yeah. Yes, yeah,
as,
yeah.
As, yeah,
yes. Thank as, you, as and all so of thank us. You, thank you, Chloe. Yes. You're welcome.
So yes, once again, Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans, sponsored by Speculative Fiction Academy, where you can, you know, learn a little something from Mr. Mark Abbott, who teaches a couple of things over there. You can also have a laugh watching me whine about movies. And that's pretty much it. We're going to have to find Kirk something to do. Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. Again, thanks to our wonderful guest. And of course, thanks to my lovely friends, Mr. Johnson, Mr. Abbott, SVP, walking away from Mike now. We love you. We mean it. And fuck your diet. And when I say fuck your diet, go pick the book up is what I'm saying. So that's a good night.